Thank you, and I want to thank the organizers for organizing such a nice conference. This is a joint work with Sid Chibb at Washington University. And some of the examples I'm going to use will be drawn from this medical center where I spend some time. Before I begin, we actually, I and Sid started working on this quite a while back. And then, as with many other projects, this got shelved for a while. And we were in a meeting in St. Louis that Sid organized. And there was a conference dinner, and we had some wine, maybe a lot of wine. And then we are trying to explain this idea to Peter. And while we are doing that, we thought this is such a nice idea, we should go back to this and actually try to finish this. So there's the summary of the talk, that if you have some shell projects, try to explain it after having a lot of wine. This is also ongoing. This is not finished yet. So before coming here, I wrote some of the slides. And this was the beginning of the talk. But while being in this conference, I changed the first line to So instead of saying that, I decided to say that it seems that digitally processed mixtures are very popular. They have almost become the reference, and everything is measured in reference to the how the digitally processed mixtures perform. Now, the reason they are so popular is, of course, because of the flexibility of the digitally processed mixtures. That they can be applied to a wide variety of problems, and then they provide such a large class of mixture distributions. But this also comes with a price, that they are, in some sense, very general, and sometimes it can be argued that they lack structure. David Dunson in his talk mentioned about some of these. So what we are trying to come up with is what we call double digitally processed mixtures, but it's really a simple idea. And the goal here is to add a degree of structure while hopefully losing some of the flexibility, but maybe not too much, and do inference in this structured setting. So what I'll describe is some application and maybe some limitations of this semi-parametric double mixture models. And we lose some flexibility in terms of, in comparison to digitally processed mixtures, but maybe because we have more structure, maybe we can gain in terms of prediction. So I'll also do some comparison with digitally processed mixtures, looking at the prediction performance. There have been, in this conference, there were many talks on different kinds of DPX, digitally processed extensions. Steve McCutcheon and Peter and various other people have worked on dependent digitally process. So what I'm going to talk about is actually a very small subclass of those dependent digitally process, which provides a very nice and beautiful and very large class of models. And what I'm going to talk about is different from hierarchical digitally process. In fact, David Dunson in his talk yesterday about matrix stick breaking processes mentioned that that one way to generalize is to go from general Dirichlet process to independent Dirichlet process. What I'm calling double Dirichlet process is simply that, is looking at the performance of quite a few independent Dirichlet processes. So I just used a different name for it. So in this sense, it's a very simple idea, but I want to look at different applications and see how this independent Dirichlet process structure perform in comparison to a general Dirichlet process. So let me start with an example. This example, we are looking at measurements on two proteins, but that's not really important in this context. These measurements are taken on 156 patients. This is a very small part of the overall example, which looks at lot more proteins and different setup, pre and post surgery setup. But here we are going to look at just two of these proteins. And when I talked with the person, the biologist who gave me the data, and I asked him, do you think these two proteins are independent? So then he emailed me back saying that I think they are not overlapping. And then while I was reading this, there was another email saying that, well, in biology, you cannot really say that anything is not overlapping. So I'll correct that and say they are not totally overlapping. So I want to model this structure. And of course, this is just a two-dimensional example. So I can start with a just bivariate normal setup, where the Y1 and Y2 represent those two proteins. And I have a bivariate normal distribution with a mean and the covariance. So here is the same setup. I have a bivariate normal with the mean and the covariance. In this setting, if I want to come up with a Dirichlet process mixture model, then here is a bivariate normal mixture model where I look at the mean and the covariance together and then assume that they are coming from a big distribution G. And then on this big distribution G, which covers all the two means and the three covariance parameters, I can put a Dirichlet process prior. And then for the centering measure of the Dirichlet process, I can have a product measure of a bivariate normal for the mu and the inverse Wishart for the Dirichlet. Now, when I do this, into structure, I faced a few questions. That in this model, when you're putting in this big Dirichlet structure, should we actually go ahead and model these two biomarkers jointly? Because what this will do is this will cluster the patients, and it will cluster both coordinates and the mu's and the sigma simultaneously. Instead of doing this, do we want to look at these two biomarkers separately and do separate clustering? So the question is, do we want to cluster at the patient level, or do we want to cluster at these two individual biomarker level? So we can go for the individual biomarkers by simply looking at two separate independent Dirichlet processes. And to do that, I put more structure in the bivariate normal, where I put an equicorrelation structure, and then use two independent Dirichlet process structure, one for the first coordinate, the mu and the sigma for the first coordinate, and the other one for the second coordinate, this is the mu 2 and the sigma 2 for the second coordinate. So this is two independent Dirichlets, or I call this the double Dirichlet process. So the goal of this talk is to evaluate how this structure performs in comparison to the overall Dirichlet process structure. So I just said that. Let me move on to my second example. And this is an example on categorical data, in fact, ordinal data. And this was used in a paper by Peter and Fernando and Cortes. So the goal of this, the point of this example is we are trying to measure the relation between these two ratings from these two raters. And the measurements that we see are ordinal rating, so in a scale of 1 to 5. On how much is the invasion of the tumor in the eye. So 5 means the invasion is very high, and 1 means it's the lowest invasion. And these are the ratings from rater 1. These are the ratings from rater 2. And the point here is to measure agreement. So this is the diagonal where the two raters agree, where each of them rate 1 or each of them rate 2. And we want to see how much agreement is there. Agreement can be measured just by looking at the diagonal or by more fancy things. So I mentioned that this data were analyzed in this paper by Fernando and Peter and Cortes. They used a bivariate ordinal probit model where they look at the cell probabilities and then model this by using a using a latent bivariate probit structure. And I mean, as I go into the detail of this example, I'll explain more about their structure. But the goal of this example is to measure the agreement between these two raters. And the way generally this is done is by measuring departure from independent structure. If we put in a big bivariate probit model, then I'm not sure. Well, they suggested a way to measure independence, and I'll get into the details of this. So we'll also analyze this example using two independent DPs and see how we can measure agreement in that setup. My last example is in some sense one of the most popular user Dirichlet processes, where we look at a mixed model, where you have a mixed model structure in the beginning, the fixed part and the random effects part. And I have a normal distribution underlying for the error process. So in this setting, many people have assumed that the random effects come from a Dirichlet process, so that they have an unknown distribution, and this unknown distribution has a Dirichlet process. Now, in this some other context, there were some other models where instead of modeling the random effects of Dirichlet process, people have used Dirichlet process for modeling the covariance structure. What this does, for example, if we assume that this has a diagonal structure, then this extends the normal distribution to normal scale mixtures. Now, these are two separate ways to extend the model. One is to assume random effects of a Dirichlet process. Another way is to extend the distributional assumption for the variances. We can put these two things together. And one way to do this is to combine these two and assume a bivariate, assume a big Dirichlet process for the overall thing. So again, the question is, do we want to cluster the random effects and the covariances separately? Or do we want to cluster them at the subject level? If we want to cluster them together, then we will use a bivariate Dirichlet process here. If we want to cluster them separately, then we should use two separate structures for the random effects and the variances. Okay, so these are some of my motivating examples. So I will discuss in these examples how do we fit the models and what kind of results we get and what are the limitations of these models. So here is some preliminary stuff about Dirichlet processes, which I'll run through very quickly. So Dirichlet process defines a probability measure on measures, and we have seen this many, many times. And this gives you this stick-breaking structure, which was first published in this paper by Tiwari and Sethuraman, and then Sethuraman put it in, later it was formalized in this other paper in 1994. And these are the stick-breaking weights. If we just use a Dirichlet process, then this, because of this discrete structure, we can get strange results. For example, there was a result by Diaconis which showed that we can get inconsistent estimates. So we make things more smooth by putting a kernel and putting a mixture of those kernels. So this smooth the Dirichlet process structure. This is what we call the Dirichlet process mixture, and that's what I will be looking at. As we all know that when we use this Dirichlet process structure, then we get cluster, and I'll refer to this cluster in some of the applications. So there are some of, even though I have seven things here, we may have only two unique values. And for sampling from Dirichlet processes, we have seen that there are many different samplers. The original one goes back to the work of Michael Escobar and Steve McCutcheon, which is also called the polyhorn sampler, or here this has been referred to as the marginalized sampler. An alternative to this is to use the stick-breaking representation and cut it off at a finite truncation point, and that leads to this blocked sampler, which is a competitor to the polyhorn sampler. Now, in my experience with some of these samplers, what I have seen for the polyarm sampler that it can be very slow, especially if the dimension is very large, if n is very large. The other problem that we faced is that if the sample size is not fixed, and I'll face this in one of the examples, then the polyarm sampler can be difficult to implement. Also, this is not very easy to implement when there is a nonlinear structure, which takes to the non-conjugate case. For the blocked sampler, it's not really well understood what kind of truncation we should use. All the theoretical results that's known about the truncation is at the prior level. It's not clear what should happen at the posterior level. For Dirichlet processes, there is, I think David Dunson mentioned in his tutorial talk, that there is not very well-known method for doing model comparison. We have suggested a method for calculating Bayes' factor for Dirichlet process model, and Steve McCutcheon mentioned this in his talk. So this method can be used to do this kind of comparison, where if we have a Dirichlet process and some other competitor models, we can calculate the marginal likelihood and see how this perform in comparison to the parametric models. And this is based on this simple identity, where we use this basic marginal identity, which is simply rewriting the posterior in the other way, and then evaluating each of these terms in the expansion, in the expression. The only extra step for doing this is, in addition to doing a Markov chain sampler, you need to evaluate the likelihood, which has to be done by this. You have to run another sampler to calculate the likelihood part of this expression. This method actually works quite well. So I've shown you an example in just some numbers in the previous slide. These are the numbers I showed you. But in fact, we have done some simulation study using this method, where we have simulated data from a four-component mixture of bivariate normals. So the data that's simulated from looks like this. And then we applied this method and compared this and checked to see how this Bayes factor performed. And we found that in this particular example, when data came from four-component mixture, this method actually picked up that Dirichlet process is performing better than the simple normal structure. When we tried the other case, when we simulated the data from a normal structure instead of a four-component mixture, then again the Bayes factor calculation picked up that the normal model is doing better than the Dirichlet process model. So that's a kind of a quick run-up through the Dirichlet process and some of the work that we have already done. So let me get back to the double Dirichlet process structure. So the structure that we have is, we are thinking of a kernel or a parametric density at the first level. And this one has two blocks of parameters, what I call phi I and psi here. And instead of using a single Dirichlet process for these two together, I want to use two independent Dirichlet processes for these two separately. So as a result, what I'll get is this double mixture, where you have mixing over both this G phi and G psi. And the first example that I referred to, this kernel, the F function, is a bivariate normal, and I'm mixing over the two coordinates. I'm mixing over the mu 1 and the sigma 1 in this first Dirichlet process, and mu 2 and sigma 2 in the second structure. But this is I'm going to do a simulation study. And for this simulation study, this structure is too hard to handle. So I'll go back to the very simple model where all this started, which is the simple normal means model. So this is, in some sense, the simplest model. I have two means, phi I and psi I, and I'm going to use two separate Dirichlet processes on these two coordinate means. And I'm going to generate data from this structure, from this double Dirichlet process and mean structure, and see how things behave to understand how this is performing. So the first plot I'm going to show you is a plot of these means to see the clustering structure. So this is how the clustering structure behaves, and this is kind of what's going on behind the structure. So we have clustering in this axis and independent clustering in that axis. In this axis, I have a small alpha, so I have only three distinct values. In this way, I have eight distinct values. And then we form pairs using those combinations. And not all the pairs are represented. So for example, I only get this pair here. And then I get all the pairs, the XY pairs, in this direction. And again, some of the pairs are not represented here, and some are represented. Because when you form the clusters, then all of them may not be picked. So when you look at the observations which are generated from this, then that's how they look like. So we kind of lose some of the clustering because of the error variance. So how does this compare to doing a Dirichlet process in two dimensions? So I call this the bivariate, but it means that I'm putting one single Dirichlet process in these two things together. So here I get clusters, and the blue ones, which probably you can barely see, are the means, and then the black ones are the observations that come out of those means. So these are the distinct values of the mean. So here we see a more general structure in the two-dimensional space instead of this product structure that we saw in the previous one. So these are the two different structures that I'm comparing. This comes out of a single Dirichlet process in the two dimensions, and this is two individual Dirichlet processes in the two separate directions. So we simulated data from each of these models, both the double DPM model and the bivariate DPM model. This one can be fed by doing a two-stage polyarn scheme or polyarn sampler or by a two-stage blocked sampler. But collapsing, what I mean by collapsing is doing some analytical integration so that we only have to generate the cluster indicators and not the actual mu values. That can get more difficult in this case. So the first setup comparison that I'm going to look at is looking at this mean square error. This is not really sample over the sampling distribution, but this is simply looking at each coordinate, looking at the posterior mean over each coordinate, and then adding over the coordinates. So this is adding over the data points, the 50 data points. So I have two different cases. In the first case, I generated data from a double Dirichlet process. In the second case, I generated data from one single Dirichlet process in two dimensions. And this is looking at the mean square error in each direction separately. And the blues are the ones that comes by fitting a double Dirichlet process. So here, this is the correct model. And the blacks are the ones by fitting the bivariate Dirichlet process. So here, this is the correct model. So what I see here is they perform quite similarly. In the second coordinate, it seems that the double Dirichlet process is giving better performance, where I have more clusters or more distinct points. And the bivariate Dirichlet process is not doing that well when data generated from the true model. Here, the data generated from here, so double DP is the incorrect model here, but it's still doing reasonably well in that structure. I also wanted to compare the clustering structure, but for clustering, I I don't know how to do the clustering comparison, so I looked in the literature and found this criteria by Wallace, going back quite a few years, for comparing two separate clusters, or what I call two separate partitions. So I want to compare one partition. So this is one partition of the observations, and another partition. And the way this is done here is by looking at pairs within each cluster. So I look at the pair of numbers which are in the same cluster here, and then I see if this pair is repeated in the same cluster in the other partition. And then I count how many of the pairs which are in the same cluster in the first one are repeated in the second one. And then I compare this to the reference partition. So if this is my reference partition, so I see how many are in this cluster in the reference partition and how many is in the second cluster in the reference partition. So then the Wallace criteria is simply the ratio of these two. So what this does is it looks at a reference partition and then see how many pairs are possible within each cluster in the reference partition. And then it checks how many of those pairs are repeated in the same cluster in the comparator partition. So this is the probability that two pairs will be this in the same cluster in the reference. What's the chance they will be repeated in the comparing partition? So when I do this calculation in this simulated data, then these are the comparison in terms of the average over the MCMC iterations. Then I see that, again, both this model, the double DP model, is performing reasonably well. In fact, it's losing in the first coordinate in the comparison, but it's gaining in the second coordinate in terms of in this comparison. So this was a simulated data. Let me go back to my first example, which is a very, very similar example of two dimensions, where I'm looking at these two biomarker protein measurements. There's a lot more involved in this data that I'm not going to get into. So there is a pre and post surgery, and there is a nodal involvement issues involved. But the part of the data that I am looking at, these are the two protein measurements. So this is one of them, and this is the other one. And this biologist says that there is not too much overlap, and I sort of see that in this plot. So there is quite a few outlying observations, and then there is a cluster here. But in terms of a direct connection between these two, we don't see that much. So I'm going to compare these two models. The first one is the single Dirichlet process, and this is two independent Dirichlet processes in this data. This shows if I want to predict a new observation from this model, and if I want to predict a new mean mu from this model, then this is the first coordinate for the two models, and this is the second coordinate for the two models. Sorry, these are the first coordinates, and these are the second coordinates for these two models. So in this case, there is almost similar performance between the two. Here I see that there is the sampler kind of goes to the negative side occasionally in this case, which is kind of strange because we know that these values are positive, but it's, of course, I'm feeding a normal model, so it's not, the model is not restricted. This shows the plot of the predictive densities for the observed, for predicting a new observation. Again, these two are very similar, but here I see that the predictive density, I have tighter bounds here, the predictive density is tighter and sharper here compared to what I'm getting from the bivariate Dirichlet process. Now, I didn't try to cheat in this example, so I used the similar alpha value and all similar priors in both of these examples. So this could be due to the covariance structure and the structure that I put in the covariance in this double DP model. is the same plot, but here we are looking at the bivariate density estimate instead of the individual density estimates. Again, we see that this is much tighter and much sharper here compared to this, as this is showing a lot more variance in the for predicting a new observation. I also looked at more predictive performance. So this is the conditional predictive ordinate where we look at each observation and try to predict that observation given all the other observations. And these are the conditional predictive ordinate plots. The blue ones are from the independent Dirichlet process. These are from the bivariate Dirichlet process. In general, we see that the blue numbers are higher compared to the black ones towards the top and most of the plot. Though we also see that towards the bottom for some of the outlying observations, the bivariate DP maybe is giving slightly higher conditional predictive ordinate compared to the independent DPs. If I combine those numbers and look at what's called the pseudo-marginal likelihood, then in comparison, the double Dirichlet process is giving us a substantially higher pseudo-marginal likelihood compared to using one single Dirichlet process on two dimensions. I also looked at a model comparison using DICs, and I'll run through this rather quickly and show you the number. I have compared this to using DIC, and this is one of the DICs that has been proposed to use for mixture model. I, of course, prefer to use Bayes factor, but I don't know how to calculate Bayes factor yet for double Dirichlet processes. But in this DIC comparison, again, we see that the double Dirichlet process is giving higher DIC value compared to the bivariate Dirichlet process. So I'll move on to my second example. But before that, I'll mention some convergence rate results that's by Shibashis and van der Waart in the setting of Dirichlet processes. So in this 2001 paper, which is one of the longest annals papers that I have seen, they have looked at the location mixture case, normal location mixture case, and so this is the usual case when you mix it with the normal mean. And then they showed that if the data generating model, I shouldn't call it the truth, the data generating model is also a normal mixture, then the rate of convergence in Hellinger distance, that this distribution will converge to that distribution, is at this rate. So it's square root of n multiplied by 1 over square root of n multiplied by log n power 3 over 2. Now, in that 2001 paper, they have also looked at the bivariate case instead of the individual univariate case. So if we consider mixture over both location and scale and put a location scale mixture and a joint distribution on the location and scale, and then use the Dirichlet process on that bivariate distribution, so this is what I have been calling bivariate Dirichlet process, then the convergence rate result in this case is 1 over square root of n, but now is slower, so now it gets multiplied by log n over 7 over 2. Now, even though I'm talking about this today, Shubhashis has looked at what I'm calling double DP or two independent DP in their 2001 paper. So they looked at the case that if we use two independent Dirichlet processes for the location and the scale. So that's what I have been calling double DP. And they have shown that in this case, we actually get back the same rate as the one single Dirichlet process if the true distribution is also a double mixture. So this happens because in this case, because of the independent structure, we are looking at the product space instead of looking at this much larger space. So we get back this same rate. And this rate is faster than the what we expect in the bivariate DP case. So there is some convergence rate results which suggest that in this case, it will actually converge faster compared to the bivariate DP case. Okay, so back to my data example, where we look at this data set that's been considered in Fernando and Peter's paper. So this is the two rater, and we are trying to measure the agreement between these two. And here we see that there is substantial agreement between the raters. The numbers in the diagonals are quite high. We also see that most of the ratings are in this range between 1 and 2 and 1 and 2, and very few ratings in 3, 4, and 5. So the model that Fernando and Peter and Cortes proposed is this bivariate ordinal model, where they use a latent bivariate normal, and then they model the cell probabilities using this latent bivariate normal and using these cutoff points. And one interesting point that they make is that if you allow the scale here to vary, if the sigma is also varying, then there is no point to allow the scale of the cutoff points to vary also. So if sigma is varying here, then you can actually use fixed cutoff points for these probabilities. Now, I should mention that the interrated data was just an example in their paper. The main point of this paper was to show how this model works. But if I concentrate on the interrated data example, then the goal is to measure agreement between the raters that I already mentioned. And generally, the way this is done is the agreement is measured by measuring dependence departure from independence, because people realize that the marginal distribution may have a strong effect on the number that you see here. So that's why they measure departure from independence. One of the way this could be done is by looking at the latent bivariate normal Z and looking at the correlation in that Z, which is called the polychoric correlation. But in their setting, when you're looking at mixtures of normal, then what do we actually mean by a polychoric correlation, and how do we interpret whatever way we define this polychoric correlation? So I'm going to use a slightly different model, and this is a model from the frequentist literature where they proposed what is called a latent class model. So the point of this latent class model is we assume that these subjects, they belong to different latent classes. So the probability for a subject depends on which latent class he or she belongs to. But once we know this class, then actually once within the class, the ratings are actually independent. So the reasoning behind this is roughly that there are subjects who have low invasion and there are subjects who have high invasion. And then there are some clinical characteristics which can point out that the subjects have low invasion and subjects have high invasion. And both of these raters can get access to this clinical characteristic. But once someone is in the low class, then the way the raters rate them are completely independent. And once someone is in the high class, then the way the raters rate them, that's completely independent. And this doesn't have to be just two classes. It can be more than two classes also. So the overall model, we model the cell probabilities for each subject using this. So this is the indicator of which class the subject belongs to. And then once we know which class the subject belongs to, then the ratings are independent. So the So the dependence structure comes here because of the clustering, because of these latent classes. So we used, since there is a natural independent structure here, so we use this double Dirichlet, these two independent Dirichlet process model here. So for each of these groups, we fit a univariate ordinal probit model. And that's how the model looks like. So for each of these probabilities, we fit a univariate model using this latent univariate normal. Now, this is one of the things that I referred to when I mentioned the computational issues of the Dirichlet process. Since I have a mixture structure here, so the number of subjects in each class is not fixed. That changes from iteration to iteration. Whereas if we look at the poly-Arn sampler, it's designed to handle a fixed number n of subjects. So that's where we face the difficulty using the poly-Arn sampler. Now, this a similar mixture structure was also used in this paper on gene expression by Kim and Do and Peter and Tang. And they have suggested a modification of the poly-Arn sampler to as a solution to this problem. Okay, so this is a messy table. And the three different colors, so these are the cell probabilities. The three different colors here, the first one shows simply the observed numbers. So those are the observed relative frequencies in this table. And those are copied from their paper. The second number is also set of numbers is also copied from their paper, the Peter and Fernando paper. And these are the estimates they got, and those are the credible intervals they obtained for each of these cell probabilities. And then the numbers in blue are the numbers we got using this two independent Dirichlet process and the mixture latent class structure. So the numbers are very similar. Both of these models fit reasonably well to the data. What I do want to point out is, again, the credible interval. If we compare this credible interval to the one that we got, then this is tighter than the number that they got. And it works the same way in many of the other cases. Again, I didn't try to cheat. I exactly copied the whatever prior they tried to use. They mentioned in their paper, I exactly used that prior. Now, the extra thing that we get by fitting this model is we can look at these latent groups. And this is one of the latent groups and the marginal probabilities for this latent group, because we have independent structure within the group. So these are the marginal probabilities whose product make up the overall table. So what we see is that the first latent group is basically those who are rated 1 by rater B. So that's basically make up the first latent group. And if we take the product, if we look at the estimate of the marginal probabilities, then we see that there is reasonable agreement here. And that's basically all there is in this table. Most of these numbers are close to 0. Whereas if you look at the latent group 2, then these is, I only used two groups. Then these are the ones which are not rated 1 by rater B, everyone else. And most of these are rated as 2 by both raters, and some of these are rated by 1. And if we look at the cell probabilities in this case, again, we see that there is less but agreement in this cell or in this group. So we get this nice structure and nice interpretation by looking at these two latent groups. I have another example, but I think for the sake of time, I'll skip over this example. And move on to the summary. So what we have argued is that using these double DP mixtures, we can add a level of structure to just simply mixture modeling with DP, because we can add in this kind of independent structure. And this models can produce interesting product clustering in the space. And I don't think they are applicable to any problem, but there are specific problems in which case this structure can become very useful. Thank you.
Okay, actually before the questions, let me just remind you once again about workshop questionnaires. So just fill them out and hand them in. Now, any questions?
Yeah, you mentioned a lot of the issues that you're describing here arise in experimental design as well.
Right.
Traditional division is to look at higher order design, so one ways and two ways and so on. In the memory serves me right, Chris Bush looked at a little bit of the issue in his dissertation, where to get away from that strong structural independence issue, you can think about a third level, maybe very tightly controlled, where you actually allow interactions as well.
Okay.
And then you don't force that independence quite so strongly.
Yeah, that's how we also think about this. It is more like a main effect model instead of an interaction model. The bivariate DP is like an interaction model, where this is like a main effect model. But I look at his thesis, I haven't looked. Thank you.
There we are. You were comparing the Dirichlet process to the mixture, and you had that kind of that base factor thing that you and Sid did.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't quite sure what I saw on that slide, but if it was early in the morning, maybe I should ask a question. I'm falling asleep. If you have the mass parameter of the Dirichlet process kind of jacked up enough, it'll become the normal model.
Yes.
So I wasn't quite sure whether you had a low mass parameter, you didn't allow it to be big enough, or just that when you fit the difference in there, your significant difference, the base factor thing, just showed that the Dirichlet process may have fit just like it, but it wasn't significant enough to use horrible frequencies.
So we used a prior of the mass parameter, and it didn't put significant probability that it will move towards very large values or very small values. And since the base factor would integrate over the prior, so it reflect, I mean, that's what is reflected in the comparison. That for this particular choice of prior on the alpha parameter.
So the Dirichlet process didn't go to have a mass of infinity to what would sort of fit the data. It just didn't quite go there enough. And so it actually fit poorer than the normal distribution by itself.
Yes, and also the base factor, I mean, it didn't move completely towards that. It may have some visits to that area, but since the prior probability, the prior structure actually plays a big role in the base factor calculation, so that might be what is reflected here.
Any third questions? 10 seconds to think about it before we close. Okay, going. All right, so let's thank the speaker once again.